Welcome to the Risk and Repeat podcast, episode number 219. I'm Rob Wright, Security News Director at TechTarget, and I am here with Senior Security News Writer Alex Kalafi. Alex, welcome.
Thanks, Rob.
How are you doing on this fine Tuesday?
I write a 4,000-word Microsoft story. I go on vacation for a week, and when I come back, the story I've been waiting weeks for has finally come out.
Yeah, you missed a big one last week.
Yeah,
we are of course discussing the Storm 558 attacks and the latest development in that quagmire. Microsoft last week, while Alex was on vacation, published a blog post that was the completed technical investigation, the results of the completed technical investigation into those attacks.
Mm-hmm.
And just to quickly summarize what those attacks were for those that may not have remembered a couple of months ago, but it was early July. Microsoft put out an advisory, a blog post, a couple things, right? It was, I think, Tom Burt, VP at Microsoft, put something out.
Yep.
And there was also Microsoft Security Response Center blog post from them, basically saying that they had been attacked or used in an attack against several organizations, a China-based espionage group, referred to as Storm 558, had compromised the Outlook and Exchange accounts of approximately 25 organizations, including several federal government agencies. So kind of a big deal. And I guess on its face, it's like, oh, you know, another espionage attack. But we quickly learned that it was a little bit bigger than that. It was a little bit more complicated and a little bit, I guess, more dire for Microsoft because they had, the threat actors had exploited a token validation issue within Microsoft, which many InfoSec experts and threat analysts and researchers termed as a vulnerability, and had also acquired a Microsoft consumer signing key, an MSA key, Microsoft account key, and used that to forge tokens, authentication tokens, to get into, I guess it was Outlook Web Access and Outlook.com, and was able to get into these email boxes for these 25 organizations. Not good. Not good. And at the time, there were big questions about how the threat actor obtained the MSA key. And we went, I think it was about a week before Microsoft came back and said, hey, we're still investigating. And we waited weeks and we waited weeks. And Alex, you published a story about a lot of criticism that Microsoft had been hit with of late.
Yep.
And the Storm 558 attacks played into that. Do you want to just quickly summarize what was in your article and kind of how those attacks played into it?
Yep. We can also direct folks to listen to the last episode of Risk and Repeat, where we went in depth on the article, but it was sort of a 3-4 month long investigative thingamajig where I talked to executives, researchers, some other folks about some of the criticisms Microsoft's faced over the last decade. I had been sitting on it for a while, but the Storm 558 stuff that you were mentioning sort of reignited my interest in the story, and basically the issues that ended up forming the basis of the story were transparency issues, particularly surrounding cloud, which is relevant to this attack, patch bypasses, proxy not shell being, I think it was proxy not shell being the most egregious one that I sort of referenced in the story. And then just a decline of their security initiatives being a little harder to work with over the last decade or so. Now, there were some disagreements. There was some color in the piece. It wasn't strictly linear, the criticism of Microsoft, but but I would say that's sort of the brief overview, and it's available now at techtarget.com/search security.
Yes. And one of the things that you pointed out in your article up top was that it was not just the vendors and researchers out there that were a little miffed with Microsoft. Senator Ron Wyden, Oregon senator, published a pretty scathing letter in response to the Storm 558 attacks and publicly called on DHS, CISA. Was the Justice Department in there too? I have to go back and look at the letter, but basically saying, you know, Microsoft failed in its duties to protect organizations, and you know, wanted a investigation into this specific matter, this specific series of incidents. And sure enough, the Cyber Safety Review Board under DHS and CISA is currently examining that. They're examining the broader sort of cloud security threats out there and issues that we're having with cloud security. I mean, the threat actors are going very hard at cloud instances and cloud services right now, and it seems like we're struggling to properly configure and set up those cloud services and cloud infrastructure and keep them safe, and just a lot of problems there. But the Storm 558 attacks were in particular focused on in that investigation, or are being focused on. I don't think the investigation is complete yet. So the MSAQ was a big part of that controversy around the attacks. How did the attackers get this key? And a lot of people had pointed out, it wasn't a total mystery, because a lot of folks had pointed out there'd be no reason for the customer to have this private key and for that to be exposed. This is something that a lot of folks had said was most likely taken from Microsoft somehow, some way. They weren't sure how, because there's all these protocols and guidelines and practices to keep these sorts of things, you know, a private signing key is very important. This is basically allowing authentication for that customer, for like the entire series of employees or users or whatever that customer has. But what was alarming in this blog post was just the repeated errors that led to the bad guys getting this key. So it starts with just the fact that this key was included in a crash dump, which I got to say, that's not a great look for Microsoft. The blue screen of death contributing to this hack is just not a great look for them. Mm-hmm. They found that a consumer signing system crash in April of 2021, I'm quoting from the blog post here, resulted in a snapshot of the crashed process, parentheses, crash dump. The crash dumps, which redact sensitive information, should not include the signing key. In this case, a race condition allowed the key to be present in the crash dump, parentheses, this issue has been corrected. That phrase, this issue has been corrected, appears multiple times in this blog post, this latest blog post about the Storm 558 investigation. The post goes on, the key materials presence in the crash dump was not detected by our systems, parentheses, this issue has been corrected. Are you detecting a theme, Alex?
Microsoft being buttoned up is definitely one of the themes. What theme are you thinking of?
The issues.
That they're not being called vulnerabilities. That issue is sort of doing a lot of heavy lifting for a very complicated thing that's going on.
Yeah, I mean, so if your scanning systems don't pick up an encryption key in a crash dump, that's not a vulnerability, or probably not. But the race condition, I mean, I don't know. We'll get to Microsoft's response later. In any case, this post goes on to sort of outline a number of errors, mistakes, screw-ups. Let's just call it what it is. that contributed to that. I think by my count, there was at least five, but I think there may have been six total in this post that contributed to this key ending up in a debugging environment. So normally when like I guess when this information is included in a crash dump, it's stripped out. Well, it wasn't stripped out. It was moved to an isolated production network, and then it was moved to the debugging environment, which is just an environment that's connected to the internet in Microsoft's corporate network. So there's this information sitting in the debugging environment, and lo and behold, Microsoft says at some point after April 2021, Storm 558 successfully compromised a Microsoft engineer's account. They used token stealing malware. They got this individual's account, and they accessed the debugging environment, and they got the key. And so they were able to use this key to forge authentication tokens. And another part of this was worth mentioning was that the key in question, they said it was inactive, and it was, because it expired. It had expired, and they mm-hmm. just re-upped it, and that made it usable for the threat actors. They renewed it.
That's good.
Yeah. Oh man. So anyway.
Yeah.
The post just outlines all of these quote unquote issues, mistakes, errors, screw ups, as I call them, that led to this. It's a real embarrassing look, I think, for Microsoft. Alex, as somebody who has been writing about Microsoft now, most recently for that big feature of yours last month, but you've covered them for a while. What did you make of the tone of this blog post and the way they outline things?
I sort of alluded to it. I thought it was a little buttoned up, highly serious, kind of a shorter post than I expected. Mm-hmm. Maybe 500 or 600 words of relevant text. The other thing, here's what I'm struggling with just about this post in general, is that I think they knew this was going to make them look bad, and they put out some information publicly that I don't know if they actually had to put it out this way. I mean, I think they were ethically obligated to, but that's neither here nor there. And I'm to some extent impressed with how much they put in here about their own sort of vulnerabilities, even if they didn't call them vulnerabilities. Mm-hmm. And that the MSA key being taken from their environment rather than a customer. So there's that impulse I have that's like, well, it's not complete transparency, but this is more transparency than I expected. And you don't want to, if someone screws up and they own up, you sometimes I feel this impulse to be careful about how much I go all in on criticizing them, because, mm-hmm. you know, they clearly knew how bad this was going to make them look. So there's that part of me that's like, I kind of want to applaud them for the transparency that's there. But hearing you talk about it, seeing Ariel's article, our colleague Ariel, and just everything that's come out since then, I also agree with the idea that there are a lot of details missing. There are words like issue that are standing in for what could be 300 words of text, mm-hmm. right? And so I'm of two minds here. One is I want to applaud them for the transparency that they did provide, but also don't really think it's enough.
Yeah.
How about you?
Well, the thing that struck me was that, I mean, if you read this, you understand what it's saying. Like,
yes,
the bad guys stole the key from us. They got into our network and they acquired, that's how they obtained the key. So there's the mystery is solved, but they don't really spell that out. And in fact, the way they framed this blog post, I understand why they did it, because it is the way that they outlined this, I guess, is chronologically accurate. I mean, this seems like the series of events, but I guess it's not really an accurate picture, or it's, I don't even want to say misleading. It obscures the issue that this would not have happened if a Microsoft engineer account had not been compromised. You know, the data ends up in a crash dump. Okay, not great. The data gets moved, you know, they scan it and the data gets moved to an isolated production network from there into a debugging environment. Also not good. But the threat actor should not have had access to that debugging environment. And they didn't know about it until June, July, whenever they first detected these attacks and started the investigation. Or whenever they, I guess, were told, remember, it was a federal agency that first detected these attacks. They would have had no idea about this. None. Mm-hmm. So the way that this is sort of positioned and framed, it's like, well, crash dump, you know, what are you going to do? And then it, you know, the third or fourth graph in the outline of how this unfolded, it's like, oh, well, you know, this account was compromised and they had access to the debugging environment and the crash, mm-hmm. and they were able to get the crash dump that incorrectly contained that MSA key. And of course they point out that due to log retention policies, they don't have logs with specific evidence that show the exfiltration of the key by this actor, but that it's the most probable, I think they said it's, yeah, the most probable mechanism by which the actor acquired this key. Well, that's something. So I didn't really care for the way it was positioned and outlined. And I thought it was a little, I felt like for something like this, for a major attack, for a major breach, because this is what happened. They were breached. They were breached. For something on this level where you have federal customers, and again, CISA, you know, they first detected this, they came out, or rather the federal agency detected it. CISA came out and said, you know, they were able to detect this attack because they had enhanced logging, and Microsoft, you know, said, I guess they heard complaints from CISA and others basically saying, you know, this sort of enhanced logging should be available to all customers, not just the highest paid license or subscription level. So good that Microsoft did that. But they never would have been able to detect these attacks without that data. And they still don't totally know that this is how the threat actor got it. And it just seems like for something of this size and scope, it would have been a longer post, a more detailed post of some kind. And there would have been more than just, hey, we're committed to transparency and trust, and here's our investigation findings. And listen, we do all these things. We do all the things. We have a highly isolated and restricted production environment. We have all these controls, zero trust. That's great. You know, hats off to you guys, but you guys got worked. And you got worked over because you made repeated mistakes that the threat actor was able to take advantage of. And again, you had no idea. A federal agency was the first one to detect this. And if they hadn't done that, their pants would still be down, so to speak. So I think a longer post, one that was maybe had more of a apologetic tone, that's like, hey, we screwed up. I know that Microsoft is never going to say that, but there have been other organizations that have had major breaches that we've covered over the years, and more recently in your time here, Alex, where the CEO or somebody, CTO or whoever, has taken a much more, even if they don't come out and say, we screwed up and we're so, so sorry. It's much more of a conciliatory tone, a apologetic tone that is aware of the situation and how it looks. This, I kind of feel like it's a little tone deaf. And maybe that's, I'm being fair, too harsh, but I don't know. I just feel like, especially with all the criticism that they've been under, which you've been outlining or have outlined in your story and which we discussed on the last podcast, it just seems, yeah, a little tone deaf.
I will tell you that when you're like, in Microsoft, this is going to be the last, this is the completion of it. And I read the blog post and I was like, oh no, this is clearly the next, this is the next disclosure, but they're clearly not done after this point. Right. And I did a control F and I noticed that there's this little line at the beginning.
Yep.
Our technical investigation is concluded. That makes me think that we're not actually going to hear anything else. And under those grounds, I think you're completely right. I think as the kids would say, my beige flag is that I want to give everyone the benefit of the doubt.
Right.
But I think you also make a good point in that this is a giant company. They screwed up. And they're kind of obscuring their language here. And what language is there isn't detailed enough, given who was affected, how much they were affected, and so on. So I would say I'm inclined to agree with you more now, having heard you lay it out, than when I guess I offered my initial take.
Mm. Yeah, just be thankful you were out last week, because I was really in an uproar about this. Slacking back and forth and just like, you know, on staff calls, just being like, I don't understand what's going on here.
I was silently, I hadn't actually turned off my Slack, so I had the running feed of some effing and jeffing.
Yep. All right, let's turn to so I think this is the big issue with this post and with the situation here. Yes, there was some transparency about what went on with these attacks in that post. But, you know, we and many other outlets had a lot of questions about what was not in there. And Alex, I think you read through the Wiz post. I think Wiz, yes, they had initially, I think about a week or maybe it was 2 weeks after the initial Microsoft post about these attacks back in July, had put out a lengthy report that examined sort of the capabilities of the MSA key. And hey, there's a lot more to this MSA key than maybe Microsoft is saying in its initial post, and we think it can do X, Y, and Z. And there's a lot of questions about what the threat actor might have done with it, yada, yada, yada. So they do a follow-up post, and they pointed out some important questions in that post, I guess, about stuff that still has not been answered. What stood out to you from that Wiz post?
What stood out to me was the tone of it being harsher than I anticipated Wiz being capable of in this sort of situation. Mm-hmm. In that they did applaud Microsoft for their transparency, which does reflect my conversation with Wiz CTO and co-founder Ami Lutwak for my big Microsoft story, because my impression from talking to him was that there is definitely a big factor of riding the party line, which I'm not saying that was what happened, but that was my impression of some parts of that conversation.
Right. And they're partners. Yeah.
And they're partners. But this post, even though there was some, we applaud Microsoft for being transparent, the louder part of that blog to me was the questions remain. And the questions remain really suggesting, it hinted at some pretty serious criticisms under the surface, was what I felt. Did you feel similarly?
I did. I think they took a very diplomatic approach with this.
Yes, great word.
Gave Microsoft credit where they thought they had earned it.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, they say it. They say burning questions related to this case that are unanswered.
Raises as many questions as it answers. That exactly. was the part that raised a bit of a flag to me.
Great point. And let's discuss. So number one, we don't know, because Microsoft isn't saying, because I definitely asked and so did other reporters, when was the engineer's account compromised? Because if you don't know when it was compromised and you don't have a date for it, then how are you supposed to, like, if you're trying to figure out the earliest possible date at which Storm 558 acquired the key and was able to do what it was doing, well, then that's a pretty important bit of information. When was that engineer's account? Because otherwise they would have never had access to the debugging environment. So the fact that that information is not in that post, and they don't say why it's not in that post, and they won't answer the question, leads me to believe it's a lot closer to the April 2021 date of when that crash dump ended up in the debugging environment than maybe more recently. I mean, some folks, mm-hmm. I've read some folks to say, well, if they had the key that long, maybe they would have used it earlier. Maybe they would have been compromising Outlook Exchange instances at an earlier date. Who knows? Maybe it's possible. But then why not just say if you've already said in the post we don't have the log data, then just, you know, for the exfiltration, why not just say, hey, we don't have the log data for this specific engineer account, so we don't know exactly when it was compromised, but we know, I mean, they said it's token stealing malware. So without that, you're looking at a 2-year window of potential threat activity. Two years, at least 2 years, more potentially if it's close to that April 21 crash dump.
Mm-hmm.
And then the big thing, I know a lot of folks.
Sorry to jump in, yeah, but just the phrase itself of April, of after April 2021.
I know.
Is absurd. That's an absurd 3 words to write.
I know.
But anyways, go ahead.
I think it's really okay. The key ends up in a crash dump. It shouldn't have been there. There was an issue. The key gets moved from the isolated environment into the debugging environment. Also shouldn't have happened. There was a screw up there. Why are we to believe that those were the only two screw-ups? How do we know there weren't more MSA keys? How do we know there wasn't other sensitive data that incorrectly ended up in crash dumps and that were in the debugging environment? And if there were, mm-hmm. why do we assume that the threat actors didn't also find them? I mean, major, major questions. Again, ask those questions to Microsoft, no response. Or the response was, that's all the information we're sharing at this time. So right. it's distressing because if the threat actor had access, let's just say it was a few months, that's still long enough to find a lot of valuable data in there if it was incorrectly included in the debugging environment when it wasn't supposed to be. And that could put other organizations at risk. And to not say anything about that is just really, I don't know, that feels like, I mean, when we talk about your story, Alex, security failures, was one of the terms that was used. That feels like a security failure to me.
Yes, that's fair.
Straightforward about that. I mean, I just wonder, I don't know. I wonder, a simple question that I had, Ariel had in writing this, other outlets asked the same question, I know, is, are you investigating other potential compromises stemming from compromised debugging environment? I mean, we're talking about Chinese nation state threat actors. These guys,
2 years, a long time.
Yeah, this isn't Lapsus. No disrespect to Lapsus or Lizard Squad. I mean, these guys are good. Nation state Chinese cyber espionage actors are really skilled. Formidable adversaries. It's alarming to not be able to answer that question. You know, and then there's questions about, Wiz had asked, was the threat actor targeting the engineer specifically because of their access to the debugging environment? Was there other goals? You know, I asked, did they pivot? Did they move laterally? Was this the only, like, because the thing that they say in this post is that or I think it was the earlier post maybe, was that they were fairly certain, or there's no evidence that the MSA key was used for token authentication forgery for any other things besides OWA and Outlook in these specific cases. But I don't know. Do you feel good about that, Alex?
No. No. And I have another question about this too.
Yeah, so go.
I think as this story gets a little worse, the question I have, which could be a good wrapping up point, is do any consequences come back for Microsoft? There was a letter from Senator Wyden. Is there any way they could legally face consequences if one would argue that they should? Or does this inspire new legislation about disclosures? And my instinct is no, but my other instinct is this is one of the closest incidences we've gotten to being worth inspiring legislation, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, I that's a great point. I don't know what the Cyber Safety Review Board, how harsh they may be, or if they'll be harsh at all. I don't know. Yeah. Obviously Wyden's letter was very stern, and reflected a point of view that we've seen in the InfoSec community. But again, there's just a lot of questions that Wiz points out in this, in their post. Other researchers have, and threat analysts have said similar things. You know, we don't know how they first compromised, like what the initial foothold that the threat, that Storm 558 got when they used the token signing malware. Did they just, was it just included in a phishing doc? I mean, that seems weird. We don't have any evidence or any information about how that unfolded. We don't know if the threat actor, how long it took them to identify the vulnerability in Exchange that allowed them to use the forged tokens from the MSA key. I mean, it could have taken them a while because that was an unknown vulnerability. Sorry, not supposed to say vulnerability because Microsoft says they told us and others, if it was a vulnerability, we would have said it. So not a vulnerability, even though most people seem to think that that was a cloud flaw of some kind. But we don't know that. We don't know a lot. We don't know a lot how this unfolded. The timeline is very foggy. And again, the idea that these guys just got in the debugging environment, took a key and then left. You know, again, like a big question. Did they still have access to this debugging environment? When was the access cut off? Like, were they in there at the time they discovered that this account was compromised? Were they in there when Microsoft was conducting its investigation and they were unaware? Like, I mean, these details matter. I don't know that we're ever going to get that information.
Well, apparently not, because our technical investigation has concluded.
Yeah, yeah. It's just frustrating. But yep. You brought up a great point. I mean, I wonder what's going to happen with this review, if there will be, if we have the, if Congress has the stomach or the temerity for, you know, a hearing to look at. I mean, SolarWinds, they had to answer. Colonial Pipeline was hit with ransomware. This is a little different. This put federal agencies at risk. I know there was no classified information that was obtained. You know, that was something CISA was very clear on, but I don't know.
I don't know either.
So we'll see. And, you know, maybe there will be additional third-party information findings. Obviously, Wiz did a deep dive on the MSA key and its capabilities, and we should point out that in its follow-up post last week, they said, they pointed out a couple of things that were validated in their research about the key in that last Microsoft post that was, the investigation findings. So, you know, maybe there will be more information that trickles out. Maybe we'll have to wait for Congress or something, Cyber Safety Review Board. But yeah, this is distressing. It's not a good look for Microsoft, and it's distressing to think of what else could be happening or might be coming, or what the threat actors might have done with that access and information. So,
yep.
Well, Alex, I can't say I'm glad that you were out last week, but part of me is glad
I was.
Part of me is like, you know what? He's worked really hard, you know, last few months, he deserves a break. But I appreciate you being around to discuss this on a podcast with me.
Hey, anytime a company gets into a cyber disaster of the year, I'll be there to talk about it. And in fact, next week, maybe.
Yeah,
I have a feeling we're talking about another cyber disaster of the year.
Jeez, yeah.
People locked out of their hotel rooms, Rob.
It's not great. Imagine if these MGM ransomware attacks had happened during Black Hat DEF CON. Oh my God.
Walk 30,000 steps and then can't go back into your room.
Oh my God. anyway, Alex, yes.
Yep.
Thank you. Appreciate the time.
You bet.
And thank you to the readers and listeners of Tech Target Security and the Risk and Repeat podcast. I'm Rob Wright, and we'll see you next time.